Chapter 36. Pedantic Ada once said that looking up of words in a lexicon for any other needs than those of expression, be it instruction or art, lay somewhere between the ornamental assortment of flowers, which could be, she conceded, mildly romantic in a maidenly head-cocking way, and making collage pictures of disparate butterfly wings, which was always vulgar and often criminal. Per contra, she suggested to Vaughn that verbal circuses, performing words, poodle-doodles, and so forth, might be redeemable by the quality of the brainwork required for the creation of a great logogriff or inspired pun, and should not preclude the help of a dictionary, gruff, or complacent. That was why she admitted Flavita. The name came from Alpha Vite, an old Russian game of chance and skill, based on the scrambling and unscrambling of alphabetic letters. It was fashionable throughout Astarte and Kennedy around 1790, was revived by the Mad Hatters, as the inhabitants of New Amsterdam were once called, in the beginning of the 19th century made a great comeback after a brief slump around 1860, and now, a century later, seems to be again in vogue. So I am told, under the name of Scrabble, invented by some genius quite independently from its original form or forms. Its chief Russian variety, concurrent in Ada's childhood, was played in great country houses with 125 lettered blocks. The object was to make rows and files of words on a board of 225 squares. Of these, 24 were brown, 12 black, 16 orange, 8 red, and the rest golden yellow, i.e. flavid, in concession to the game's original name. Every letter of the Cyrillic alphabet rated a number of points, the rare Russian F as much as 10, the common A as little as 1. Brown doubled the basic value of a letter, black tripled it, orange doubled the sum of points for the whole word, red tripled the sum. Lucette would later recall how her sister's triumphs in doubling, tripling, and even non-upling, when passing through two red squares. The numerical value of words evolved monstrous forms in her delirium during a severe streptococcal ague in September 1888 in California. For each round of the game, each player helped himself to 7 blocks from the container where they lay face down, and arrayed in turn his word on the board. In the case of the opening coup, on the still empty field, all he had to do was to align any 2 or all of his 7 letters in such a way as to involve the central square, marked with a blazing heptagon. Subsequently, the catalyst of one of the letters already on the board had to be used for composing one's word, across or down. The player won who collected the greatest number of points, letter by letter and word by word. The set our 3 children received in 1884 from an old friend of the family, as Marina's former lovers were known, Baron Klim Avidov, consisted of a large folding board of saffian and a box full of weighty rectangles of ebony, inlaid with platinum letters, only one of which was a Roman one, namely the letter J on the 2 joker blocks, as thrilling to get as a blank check signed by Jupiter or Jurogen. It was, incidentally, the same kindly but touchy Avidov, mentioned in many racy memoirs of the time, who once capitulated with an uppercut an unfortunate English tourist into the porter's lodge for his jokingly remarking how clever it was to drop the first letter of one's name in order to use it as a particule at the Gritz in Venezia Rossa. By July, the 10 A's had dwindled to 9, and the 4 D's to 3. The missing A eventually turned up under an aproned armchair, but the D was lost, faking the fate of its apostrophizable double as imagined by a Walter C. Keyway, Esquire, just before the latter landed, with a couple of unstamped postcards, in the arms of a speechless multilinguist in a frock coat with brass buttons. The wit of the Veens, says Ada in a marginal note, knows no bounds. Vaughn, a first-rate chess player, he was to win in 1887 a match at Cho's when he beat the Minsk-born Pat Rishin, champion of Underhill and Wilson, North Carolina, had been puzzled by Ada's inability to raise the standard of her, so to speak, damsel-errant game above that of a young lady in an old novel, or in one of those anti-dandruff color photo ads that show a beautiful model, made for other games than chess, staring at the shoulder of her otherwise impeccably groomed antagonist across a preposterous traffic jam of white and scarlet, elaborately and unrecognizably carved Lalla-Rookh chessmen, which not even Cretans would want to play with, even if royally paid for the degradation of the simplest thought under the itchiest scalp. Ada did manage, now and then, to conjure up a combinational sacrifice, offering, say, her queen, with a subtle win after two or three moves if the piece were taken. But she saw only one side of the question, preferring to ignore, in the queer lassitude of clogged cogitation, the obvious counter-combination that would lead inevitably to her defeat if the grand sacrifice were not accepted. On the Scrabble board, however, this same wild and weak Ada was transformed into a sort of graceful computing machine, endowed, moreover, with phenomenal luck, and would greatly surpass baffled Vaughn in acumen, foresight, and exploitation of chance, when shaping appetizing long words from the most unpromising scraps and collops. He found the game rather fatiguing, and toward the end played hurriedly and carelessly, not deigning to check rare or obsolete but quite acceptable possibilities provided by a loyal dictionary. As to ambitious, incompetent, and temperamental Lucette, she had to be, even at 12, discreetly advised by Vaughn, who did so chiefly because it saved time and brought a little closer the blessed moment when she could be bundled off to the nursery, leaving Ada available for the third or fourth little flourish of the sweet summer day. Especially boring were the girls' squabbles over the legitimacy of this or that word. Proper names and place names were taboo, but there occurred borderline cases, causing no end of heartbreak. And it was pitiful to see Lucette cling to her last five letters, with none left in the box, forming the beautiful Ardis, which her governess had told her meant the point of an arrow, but only in Greek, alas. A particular nuisance was the angry or disdainful looking up of dubious words in a number of lexicons sitting, standing, and sprawling around the girls on the floor, under Lucette's chair, upon which she knelt, on the divan, on the big round table with the board and the blocks, and on an adjacent chest of drawers. The rivalry between moronic Ozhigov, a big, blue, badly bound volume containing 52,872 words, and a small but chippy Edmondson, in Dr. Gurdjieffski's reverent version, the taciturnity of abridged brutes and the unconventional magnanimity of a four-volume doll. "My darling Dahlia," moaned Ada as she obtained an obsolete cant word from the gentle long-bearded ethnographer. All this would have been insupportably boring to Vaughn, had he not been stung as a scientist by the curious affinity between certain aspects of Scrabble and those of the planchette. He became aware of it one August evening in 1884 on the nursery balcony under a sunset sky, the last fire of which snaked across the corner of the reservoir, stimulated the last swifts, and intensified the hue of Lucette's copper curls. The Morocco board had been unfolded on a much ink-stained, monogrammed, and notched deal table. Pretty Blanche also touched on earlobe and thumbnail with the evening's pink, and redolent with the perfume called Miniver Musk by handmaids, had brought a still unneeded lamp. Lots had been cast. Ada had won the right to begin, and was in the act of collecting one by one, mechanically and unthinkingly, her seven luckies from the open case where the blocks lay face down, showing nothing but their anonymous black backs, each in its own cell of flavid velvet. She was speaking at the same time, saying casually, "I would much prefer the Benton lamp here, but it is out of kerosene. Pet," addressing Lucette, "be a good scout. Call her." Good heavens! The seven letters she had taken, S-R-E-N-O-K-I, and was sorting out in her spectric, the little trough of japanned wood each player had before him, now formed in quick and, as it were, self-impulsed rearrangement, the key word of the chance sentence that had attended their random assemblage. Another time, in the bay of the library on a thundery evening, a few hours before the barn burned, a succession of Lucette's blocks formed the amusing Vaniada, and from this she extracted the very piece of furniture she was in the act of referring to in a peevish little voice. "But I too, perhaps, would like to sit on the divan." Soon after that, as so often occurs with games and toys and vacational friendships that seem to promise an eternal future of fun, Flavita followed the bronze and blood-red trees into the autumn mists. Then the black box was mislaid, was forgotten, and accidentally rediscovered, among boxes of table silver 4 years later, shortly before Lucette's visit to town, where she spent a few days with her father in mid-July 1888. It so happened that this was to be the last game of Flavita that the three young Veens were ever to play together, either because it happened to end in a memorable record for Ada, or because Von took some notes in the hope, not quite unfulfilled, of catching sight of the lining of time, which, as he was later to write, is the best informal definition of portents and prophecies. The last round of that particular game remained vividly clear in his mind.
"Je ne peux rien faire,"
wailed Lucette.
"Mais rien. With my idiotic Buchstaben, R-E-M-N-I-L-K, Linkrem."
"Look," whispered Von. "C'est tout simple. Shift those two syllables and you get a fortress in ancient Muscovy."
"Oh, no," said Ada, wagging her finger at the height of her temple in a way she had. "Oh, no. That pretty word does not exist in Russian. A Frenchman invented it. There is no second syllable."
"Ruth for a little child?" interposed Von.
"Ruthless," cried Ada.
"Well," said Von, "you can always make a little cream creme or cream, or even better, there's Kremlin, which means Yukon prisons. Go through her O-R-H-I-D-E-Y, eh?"
"Through her silly orchard," said Lucette.
"And now," said Ada, "Adochka is going to do something even sillier."
And taking advantage of a cheap letter recklessly sewn sometime before in the seventh compartment of the uppermost fertile row, Ada, with a deep sigh of pleasure, composed the adjective T-O-R-F-Y-A-N-U-Y-U, which went through a brown square at F and through two red squares, 37 times 9 equals 333 points, and got a bonus of 50 for placing all seven blocks at one stroke, which made 383 in all, the highest score ever obtained for one word by a Russian scrabbler.
"There," she said. "Oof, pas facile,"
and brushing away with the rosy knuckles of her white hand the black bronze hair from her temple, she recounted her monstrous points in a smug, melodious tone of voice like a princess narrating the poison cup killing of a superfluous lover, while Lucette fixed Von with a mute, fuming appeal against life's injustice, and then looking again at the board, emitted a sudden howl of hope.
"It's a place name. One can't use it. It's the name of the first little station after Lodore Bridge."
"That's right, pet," sang out Ada. "Oh, pet, you are so right. Yes, Torfyanaya, or as Blanche says, La Tourbière, is indeed the pretty but rather damp village where our Centrion's family lives. But, mon petit, in our mother's tongue, que dis-je, in the tongue of a maternal grandmother we all share, a rich, beautiful tongue which my pet should not neglect for the sake of a Canadian brand of French, this quite ordinary adjective means peaty, feminine gender, accusative case. Yes, that one coup has earned me nearly 400. Too bad. Nedotya nula. Didn't quite make it."
"Nedotya mula,"
Lucette complained to Van, her nostrils flaring, her shoulders shaking with indignation. He tilted her chair to make her slide off and go.
The poor child's final score for the 15 rounds or so of the game was less than half of her sister's last master stroke, and Vaughn had hardly fared better. But who cared? The bloom streaking Ada's arm, the pale blue of the veins in its hollow, the charred wood odor of her hair shining brownly next to the lampshade's parchment, a translucent lakescape with Japanese dragons, scored infinitely more points than those tensed fingers bunched on the pencil stub could ever add up in the past, present, or future.
"The loser will go straight to bed," said Vaughn merrily, "and stay there, and we shall go down and fetch her in exactly 10 minutes, a big cup, the dark blue cup of cocoa, sweet, dark, skinless Cadbury cocoa."
"I'm not going anywhere," said Lucette, folding her arms. "First, because it is only 8:30, and second, because I know perfectly well why you want to get rid of me."
"Vaughn," said Ada, after a slight pause, "will you please summon Mademoiselle? She's working with Mother over a script which cannot be more stupid than this nasty child is."
"I would like to know," said Vaughn, "the meaning of her interesting observation. Ask her, Ada dear."
"She thinks we are going to play Scrabble without her," said Ada, "or go through those oriental gymnastics which you remember, Vaughn. You began teaching me, as you remember."
"Oh, I remember. You remember I showed you what my teacher of athletics, you remember his name, King Wing, taught me."
"You remember a lot, ha ha," said
Lucette, standing in front of them in her green pajamas, suntanned chest bare, legs parted, arms akimbo.
"Perhaps the simplest," began Ada. "The simplest answer," said Lucette, "is that you two can't tell me why exactly you want to get rid of me."
"Perhaps the simplest answer," continued Ada, "is for you, Vaughn, to give her a vigorous, resounding spanking."
"I dare you,"
cried Lucette, and veered invitingly. Very gently, Vaughn stroked the silky top of her head and kissed her behind the ear, and, bursting into a hideous storm of sobs, Lucette rushed out of the room. Ada locked the door after her.
"She's an utterly mad and depraved gypsy nymphette, of course," said Ada. "Yet we must be more careful than ever. Oh, terribly, terribly, terribly. Oh, careful, my darling."